Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, five wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and Susan's latest book, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses at the Wise Woman University. But you can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you so much, Justine. Here we are, another Tuesday, another blog talk show, and the earth keeps rolling around the sun, and whoosh, the year is half gone. How are you tonight, Rebecca?
I'm doing well. Yeah, the closer we're getting to my birth here, too. So every Tuesday, another week closer.
Another week closer. Indeed, yeah. Indeed. Well, I had lots of response to my post about black-eyed Susans. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
I was not aware of that either, that it could be used interchangeably, like the same way echinacea can.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you dig the root just the same and...
Just the same, yep. And tincture
yeah,
it up.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, when I first started studying herbal medicine, as an anti-infective, what most herbalists were using was golden seal. And I did not like golden seal. Golden seal did not seem friendly to me. It tasted very bad. It grows far away from people. It grows in dense woodlands. All of these things are things that tell me that golden seal is saying, hey, back off, watch it, don't use me very much. So I was really casting around for some other plant to use as an anti-infective and reading a lot of books written by people doing herbal medicine back 150 years, couple hundred years ago. and I found mention of a plant that grew in Kansas, and that they said that the native people used as an anti-infective, and I was able to get hold of some of that plant. And the name that the plant was being called in these books was a very, very rude name that I will not even repeat. And I thought, well, I'm certainly not going to be able to introduce this plant to the world by that rude name. That will really give people the wrong idea. And in thinking about, you know, what could I call it, I decided that the easiest thing would be just to call it its botanical name, which is Echinacea, right? And so we now have a wonderful anti-infective plant that lots and lots of people use, and we call it by its botanical name. And, of course, you saw that one person wrote in and said, yes, I call Black-Eyed Susan Rudbecka. And, of course, that is its name, is Rudbecka. And it is certainly not a rude plant. It is a lovely plant, and so keep your eye on your Black-Eyed Susan, or Rudbecka, whichever you wish to call it. Do we have any callers waiting for us tonight?
Yes, we have two callers, and I wanted to mention that at 9 o'clock, Karen Kane will be joining us, an author and a parent advocate for children of disabilities.
Is she?
Say that again?
I thought she had been canceled. I thought she canceled.
Oh, I did not get an email that said that, so you know something I don't.
I think that she is not going to be with us tonight, and I think that possibly my brother is going to be with us. He's just started a new company called Love a Duck, which is really amazing skincare products, and he's developed a line without any essential oils in honor of me.
Oh, wow.
So when, and if I got it right, you know, when Karen had to cancel for personal reasons, I know that they've been working on seeing if they can get Love a Duck to come in. We'll keep our eye peeled, and we might just have to do 2 hours of answering people's questions.
Okay, great. Is he calling
all
in
right
from an Oregon number? Yeah.
He would be calling from an Oregon number, correct.
Oh, okay. Great. All right, we have two callers waiting. So in the 714 area code.
Hello, Susan. It's Kathy.
Hi, Kathy. I was just saying to myself, I wonder if it's Kathy.
Thank you for
now that I know your area
having
code.
Thank you so much for all that you do, especially that I'm calling in quite a bit as I feel my way through this, through these wonderful herbs.
You're welcome. Glad to be here for you, Kathy.
I already have some success. Even I've only been using the herbal infusions for, you know, since May 1st, and I'm already seeing great results. But before I talk about that, I'd like to ask you how I can alleviate my really bad cough. I got sick last Wednesday, and I know how I did it. I know how I'm pretty sure I know how I got this virus. But in the meantime, I'm coughing and coughing, especially at night. And I can tell you what I'm doing so far. And maybe there's something I could use. Like, I can't tincture anything quick enough to get rid of this or alleviate it. But I was hoping you can help with that.
So what is it that you're doing?
What I'm doing is I got a new supply of St. John Wort's tincture, as you Hypericum.
Yes.
And I want to just double check, because on the bottle, I get it from Red Moon, your wonderful interns, former interns. Should there be three words on the bottle? Hypericum. Karina. Does that?
Yes, Karina was a former apprentice.
Apprentice. Yes. Not interns, apprentice, yes. So, yes. And there's three, should there be three words on the bottle, botanical words? Hypericum, and then P-E-R-F-O-R-A-T-U-M, and then P-U-N-C-T-A-T-U-M as in Mary.
Hypericum perfoliatum punctatum. Is that what you're saying?
My husband read it to me, and it says Hypericum. Oh, yes, you said you said it so beautifully. Perforatum?
Perfoliatum. Perfoliatum.
No, well, it says P-U-N-C-T-A-T-U-M. Is that?
Punctatum. Perfoliatum, and then punctatum.
That word is, that first word you just said is not on there. So I'm hoping that they're making the right kind here.
You're telling me that it does not say Hypericum, P-E-R-F-O-L-I.
No.
It doesn't say Hypericum perfoliatum.
It says Hypericum and then P-E-R-F-O-R-A-T-U-M. Perforatum.
Perforatum, that's fine.
Perforatum. And then the third word that Jim read was...
Punctatum.
He isn't... Yes.
And I'm not sure if that's a different subspecies that they have there or if they're using two different species together. You would have to ask them.
Okay. Now that I have the right question to ask.
However,
uh-huh.
If you're using it to try to get rid of a viral infection that's causing a cough, it won't do you any good at all.
Okay. And then the other things that I'm doing is getting a bowl of steaming water and then tenting the bowl and breathing the water. And I've had some success with that, and having a lot of honey, and drinking all my herbal infusions. But it's my headache is gone, but I'm achy and just coughing today. I think I have a hot cold. Is what I was reading your article about cold colds and hot colds, but it might be going back and forth a little bit, so it might be on its way out. But it's been pretty miserable.
How long have you been sick?
Well, my first symptom started last Wednesday. I didn't wash my hands after going shopping. Not good. And right away I knew my symptom. My throat kind of got like I was thirsty and kind of, you know, closed up. But so it just progressed. It's progressed from just a pretty bad sore throat the next day to the laryngitis, to the cough, to the achiness. So, gosh, it's been a week. It'll be a week tomorrow.
There's a couple of things. At one point you said it's a cold, and at one point you said it's a flu. And the primary difference is that colds are caused by rhinoviruses, viruses that enter our body primarily through our eyes and our nose and set up residence in our nose, so that a cold is often heralded by sneezing or a dry nose or snot starting to run out of our nose or feeling stuffed up. You haven't mentioned any of those symptoms.
That's right.
A flu tends to come on with malaise and achiness. Rarely with any upper respiratory symptoms, although there may be a cough. A cough, especially a persistent cough, depending on whether it's productive or not, may be an indication of either bronchitis, which is a bacterial infection, or pneumonia, which can be either bacterial or viral. So you have made the assumption you have a viral infection. I am not getting information from you that would make me think you have a viral infection. The information I'm getting makes me think more that you have some kind of bacterial infection that's affecting your lungs and causing you to cough.
I have yarrow tincture. No, I don't think you're missing anything.
So yarrow tincture or echinacea tincture?
Uh-huh.
I would focus in on drinking linden and comfrey, both of which ease and open the respiratory passages. I would have them hot, spoonful of honey.
Okay.
Now, let me tell you a story about myself. I don't know if it has any bearing on you. My father really wanted his eldest daughter to be a success. And he figured that a loud-mouthed girl would never be a success. So he did his best to shut me up. And, of course, he was parenting during the 50s when kind of the parenting dictates were a little different, so he washed my mouth out with soap. He beat me with his belt. He sent me to bed hungry, all kinds of things to try to get me to not be such a loud-mouthed little girl. As we can tell, it didn't work. But I really recognize the love that he was manifesting, that he did not do these things out of any kind of hatred for me, but out of sincere belief that I would not be able to get along in life and that he wanted my life to be a success. When he died, I began to cough. And I don't mean, I mean, and I'd cough like that for 10 minutes. I'd cough like that to the point where I thought I was going to pass out. I would cough like that to the point where I thought I was going to throw up. And I said to myself, oh, I am coughing out everything my father tried to stuff down my mouth. I am coughing out all of his efforts of shutting me up. But my mother was a cigarette smoker, and she smoked during her pregnancy with me, and she smoked during my entire childhood. And I'm at a greater risk for lung cancer than she is, because secondhand smoke is far more damaging than firsthand smoke, and especially when you're exposed to it in utero and as a child. So not wanting to be abysmally stupid, I set a time limit. And I said, if I'm still coughing like this in 3 weeks, I'm going to go and get a chest x-ray and check for lung cancer, because a persistent cough is also a symptom of lung cancer. Well, 3 weeks later, I was coughing at least that much. And so I went off, and we'll cut this story short.
No,
and
I'm
say
enjoying
that I did indeed managed to get a lung x-ray, but it wasn't easy, and saw that, in fact, there was nothing at all to be worried about in my lungs, and that I just had to keep coughing up all the stuff that my dad had shoved down my throat.
I'm resonating to what you're saying, because I haven't really shared with you, but I have a website, a natural health website, that I really care about sharing experts like you and all the health information that has helped me. And, you know, it's, I haven't had the success I want yet. And so, you know, it's really fascinating what you're bringing up to me right now.
So what I'm saying, to be clear, is that it's not always healthy to get rid of symptoms.
Oh, yes.
I'm not telling you what herbs I took to get rid of my cough. I'm telling you I coughed. One of the ways that I find that I am different than other people who talk about health is that I have an inherent trust of the body. I start from the premise that whatever the body is doing is correct. And it seems to me that most people start from the premise that whatever the body is doing is wrong.
Right, right.
And must be remedied. And in fact, that's the thrust of your question. What do I do to get rid of this cough?
Right.
And my answer, because we've talked many times, is, yes, you know, you could do linden, hot with honey, comfrey, hot with honey. These are all good. But my answer is always, how is this cough serving you? What is it bringing to you? What is it helping you cough up? How is it your ally? The fact that we can recognize the value of something, we can recognize it as an ally, does not mean that you are doomed to cough for the rest of your life. You can still use remedies. But we use those remedies with a different mindset, shall we say. Not the mindset of kill, murder, get rid of, but the mindset of, I really appreciate what you're doing for me, and since I don't want you to do this, I will take on that responsibility myself, and you may go. Or, in the case of what my dad shoved down my throat, I thought, this is the very best way to do this. I'm just going to keep on coughing.
Well, this is really profound. And you know what's funny, Susan? Most people would look at me as a blind person like it's the worst thing in the world. But being blind is always, I've always known it since I was a child, as a blessing growing up in my family. And I need to be more like that with the rest of my life. And I really love what you're saying about coming from the premise of maybe your body's doing the right thing. I love that. It's so liberating. It makes me smile. So thank you. Can I share you with some success with you?
We'd love to hear your success. When my mom died... The biggest hole in my life was that I didn't have anybody to call and share my successes. And I said, that's who I want to be. I want to be the person that people call and say, let me tell you about my great success. So thank you for hearing that wish and fulfilling my wish.
Oh, thank you. Well, Susan, so I found you about 2 months ago, and I loved your approach right away. It just made sense to me, the herbal infusions, nourishing herbal infusions, to drink them, to embrace them, to appreciate, just let it happen, let the benefits come as they do. And so one of the big discomforts I was having at the time was a lot of leadenness and heaviness in my legs, pain, very bad pain in my legs, swollen even, a lot of swelling in my ankles and calf muscles, and I'd wake up in the morning, can barely move. Until I started to move around, it would get a little bit better. So I've just been taking drinking the nourishing herbal infusions, comfrey and linden and nettle, and so I can tell you that all. And one other thing that I added was I got some dried dandelion. And I use that as a tea almost every day. I drink 2-3 as much as I can. And my legs are better. And I thought this would take a long time. I expected just to be patient. But my legs are, I would say, 70% better in only 8 weeks. And, you know, Susan, I'll say this too. I've had, you know, health issues, pain, and this and that over the years. And I've tried different things with not really any really good results, except for with the nourishing herbals and herbal infusions. I really feel like this is just, I'm going to do it every day for the rest of my life. And so I'm trying to get other people. My husband, he does it. He drinks a little bit. It's not as much as I do, but I just want to thank you.
You are so welcome, and I find that this is very much the case. In fact, most people start seeing results within 10 days of starting to drink nourishing herbal infusions.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that nourishment is slow. I've never found that to be true. Nourishment is very, very fast.
Amen. So I will continue to follow you and learn as much as I can. And I'm looking for, I hope your brother can come on. I'm looking for some skincare products. I can't wait. So I hope he'll be able to show up and be on the call.
I hope so too. And if not tonight, we'll be sure to get him on pretty soon.
Good, good. Okay,
okay,
thank
Kat.
You.
Green blessings. Good night.
So I did look at my past emails, and it looks like Steve is going to be here on Thursday, or be with us on the teleseminar on Thursday night. But as far as I can see,
oh, I got it wrong. So it's a teleseminar.
Yeah, it's a teleseminar.
Oh my gosh! Well, I can't do a teleseminar on Thursday, so this is all very screwed up. That's okay.
Okay.
Okay, I was wanting him to be put in. I thought that the thing for tonight had been canceled.
Unless my email is wrong.
Okay,
and
you probably
got
it right.
Okay.
This is. I always say to people, I can't read online. I cannot read online. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We'll
move to the next caller, and we'll see about Karen Kane tonight.
We're looking forward to having Karen Kane tonight, and we'll see when we can fit my brother in.
Sounds good.
All right, we have another
612 area code.
Hi, Susan. This is Kathy. Another Kathy.
Hi, another Kathy.
Yeah. I have a question about menopause and thyroid.
Okay.
A little background. I'm 57. I had a hysterectomy, and they took ovaries out 11 years ago. And so my doctor
please
said,
do
no,
me
I'm
a very big favor. And this is not for me, but it's for all women. If you say that you had a hysterectomy,
mm-hmm.
but you had an oophorectomy, then
mm-hmm.
other women might think that a hysterectomy requires the removal of your ovaries, and it does not. So if you could be clearer when you speak about this to everyone, what I actually prefer for women to say is I chose to be castrated.
Yeah. Yep, I'm wishing I hadn't at the time, and they just talked me into it, saying, you know, there was
history
of ovarian cancer.
You are more direct in your language. Other women won't be talked into it, will they?
Yeah.
If you had heard women say, I was castrated, you would have thought twice, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would have.
But be the woman who says that so that other women won't get roped into thinking that a hysterectomy means that the ovaries need to be removed. They do not.
Mm-hmm.
And it really changes a woman and changes her life.
Yes, it did. Okay. So I was 46 at that time, and then, you know, I just had some hot flashes. And it was no big deal. You know, I mean, that was the only symptom I had. And about 5 years after that, when I was about 51, I started having some major issues. I had a vertigo attack for like a week, heart palpitations. I was having severe anxiety, panic attacks, and it scared me. And then I realized both my sisters had gone through menopause at about that time. So I was thinking maybe this is the time I would have normally gone through menopause. And I talked to my doctor about it, and he didn't think so. But he sent me to a gynecologist, and that woman said, yeah, this is probably what's going on. And this is I had been reading your books, but this is when I started drinking herbal infusions daily. I try to get about 6 quarts in a week. I made a very good friend of motherwort. I still take motherwort like 3 times a day, just to help with, you know, calm me down.
Motherwort tincture.
Yes, tincture. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And
just
so
people don't go out and try motherwort infusion, which they will hate.
Oh yes, it tastes awful. And I also do Hawthorn because of, you know, the heart palpitations that kind of. But you know what? I'm going to do that, too. So I do Hawthorn tincture and motherwort tincture. And then, you know, things kind of smoothed out, and I thought, okay, I'm on the right track. And about a year ago, I started feeling icky again, and I went in, and they did some tests, and they told me that I was slightly hyperthyroid, and just to kind of watch out, you know, just to kind of maybe come back in a year and have it tested again. But in the spring of this year, I suddenly felt just awful. I mean, my heart was palpitating a lot. I had, I was shaky, and, you know, I felt like I wanted to die. It was awful, and I went in, and they took another test, and it, you know, took a while to get back, but it showed that I was extremely, well, the TSH levels were pretty much zero, and the T4, I believe it was high. So the doctor was very concerned. She said, you know, this is hyperthyroid. She said, could be Graves' disease, and she wanted to get me into an endocrinologist. And so she was very concerned, and so I thought maybe I can get in right away, but it took a month and a half to get into the endocrinologist, and which was okay. That was in early June of this year. But it's like I needed to do something. I just felt awful, and my husband has been taking this powdered, it's called superfoods, and he said, you know, it's not going to hurt you. It's just dried food. And I looked to see what was in it, and there was some seaweed in it was one of the ingredients besides alfalfa and beets and things like that. But I thought, you know, anything's going to help because I just felt awful. I'm still taking all my infusions and everything. And I started feeling better. And by the time I went to the endocrinologist, I said, you know, I feel great. But, you know, he just poo-pooed what I was doing and said to stop it. But anyway, he took another blood test, and it came back like a week and a half later. This was just a couple weeks ago. Oh, no. Yeah, about 3 weeks ago. It came back as now I'm slightly hypothyroid. And so it's kind of weird. And
there are two tests that I tell women never to get while they're in menopause. Can you guess what those two tests are?
Probably the ones I had.
Don't get a thyroid test and don't get a bone density test because they're going to be all over the map.
Yeah. It's like now, you know, I'm supposed to go back next week, but all of a sudden now I feel like I'm going the opposite way again. My heart's palpitating, and I'm having anxiety again, and it's like, oh, heaven help me. You know, I'm thinking, thank goodness for my motherwort, because it helps a little bit, you know, but it's like all I want to do is go to bed and sleep, because that's the only time I'm not feeling icky. And I'm just in my mind, not in my mind, but in my body, I'm feeling this is menopause. Although, you know, the endocrinologist says, no, it's not. But, you know, I feel it is, but I guess I wanted to talk to you just to maybe confirm that, you know, that that's what, you know, I want to honor my feelings about it.
I think one of the problems that you might be having is that you may not realize that modern medicine does not acknowledge that there is any state called menopause.
Mm-hmm.
In modern medicine, you are either premenopausal or postmenopausal, but there is no such thing as a menopausal woman. So this mm-hmm. is why the endocrinologist is poo-pooing this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to rant just a little bit, and it's not about you.
Oh, okay.
Because what you're telling me is a very, very common story in its broad general outline. You're not feeling really well.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have insurance, you go to a doctor. And the doctor, because you have insurance, send you to a specialist. And the specialist, because you have insurance, suggests tests.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is the insurance companies are now running your health care. Not
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Would you have made a different choice way back at the beginning if you didn't have insurance?
I probably would have, it would have, yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking at the very beginning, probably not. It's just, sometimes it's like I feel so awful. And thinking, you know, I'll, even if I have to pay it out of my pocket, I will, to find out what's up with me. I guess it scares me because it, my, you know, the heart palpitations are scary. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like I'm exhausted because how it's pounding, and then all of a sudden it's like.
And do you take motherwort at the time when you're having palpitations?
Yes, I try to do that now.
And does it stop the palpitations?
It does for a little bit, and then it comes right back. And then it's like, I don't know how much I can take. You know, I don't want to, I don't know.
It's in the mint family. How much mint tea could you drink?
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I tincture it myself. I grow it myself, and I have like 3 quarts sitting there just ready to use, you know. But
use it.
Okay.
There is no upper limit on it.
Oh, okay.
The reason I'm asking you is if motherwort does relieve your heart palpitations, even for a short time, then there's no underlying cause. And this brings us back again to what I was just saying, and that is that I tend to believe that the body is right rather than believe that the body is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that there's anything wrong with you. Go to enough doctors and tell enough doctors that there's something wrong with you. One of them will find something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And will suggest that you do things like surgery or take drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would like you to imagine is a triangle. Most people, when asked to imagine a triangle, usually imagine a triangle with the flat base down and the point up.
Mm-hmm.
Let's also imagine a triangle the opposite of that, with the flat base up and the point down. This second triangle describes the amount of time that it will take us to change a problem that we have using one of the 7 medicines. So the first medicine is serenity medicine, and that will take a long time to change our problem. And the last medicine is high-tech medicine or surgical medicine, and that will take the shortest amount of time to change our problem. Now, the first triangle, the one that we first drew with the flat part down and the point up, is the amount of time it will take you to heal from the side effects of the medicine that you've chosen. So it will take no time to heal from the side effects of serenity medicine. If you cure your problem with serenity medicine, it may take a long time to be cured, but there will be no side effects of any kind. Whereas if you cure your problem with drugs or surgery, although you may have a fast fix, the side effects will continue for the rest of your life. You've already experienced this by agreeing to a hysterectomy and castration,
mm-hmm.
which seemed like a fast fix, right?
It did, but it sure is lasting. Oh, my.
But it's for the rest of your life, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So
we have to realize these two triangles are always operating. And now you have the opportunity to make a different choice here
mm-hmm.
about what you're going to do about how you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You believe that what you're feeling is menopause.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certainly willing to go along with that. You're telling me that you have family history of having palpitations and anxiety during menopause. Did I get that right?
I'm the only one that has gone this hard of a time. Both of my sisters and my mom sailed through it. So that's why it was kind of confusing you know, at first, but, you know, everything kind of pointed to, you know, menopause, and I guess I was, you know, I'm just the one that I'm going to go through a little bit more difficult one, I guess.
Are you taking hormones?
No. They wanted me to, and I did for a week, and I had migraines, and I thought, this is silly. This is, you know, my body telling me. So, yeah, no, I refused that.
What women who have had their ovaries removed tell me is that their menopause is much more difficult than the menopause of a woman who has her ovaries. And yes,
I would agree.
Women whose ovaries are removed do go through menopause. Don't let anybody tell you they don't.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I personally feel comfortable with your involving yourself with serenity medicine. Do you have a meditation practice?
Not a formal one. I usually just kind of like to sit and, you know, I think of it as praying, but I don't do it as often as I probably should. But, you know.
Well, what we're talking about in terms of a practice is the daily practice.
Mm-hmm.
5 minutes is sufficient, right? 10 is certainly fine.
Mm-hmm.
The most health response in terms of heart health comes at about 15 minutes, but it's better to do 5 minutes every day than 15 minutes twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you can do on a daily basis at or near the same time. So I give myself an hour time. I do my meditation practice between 10:30 and 11:30 at night.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's 11:35, I don't say, oh, it's too late. I say, oops, it got late. Better do it now.
Mm-hmm.
No excuses.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when we're dealing with the kinds of things that you're talking about, with palpitations and anxiety, a meditation practice is certainly one of the best ways to help ourselves. I think you're doing great by drinking the nourishing herbal infusions. I think you're doing great by making a friend of motherwort, and I'm so glad that you have plants growing around you so that you can make your own tincture. And definitely, I usually say if you take a dropperful and you get results, but they go away, and they go away how quickly? 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes?
Yeah, each time it's different. You know, it's
so
thinking, yeah.
Endeavor to take another dose of motherwort before they come back.
Oh, okay.
So you take a dose, and the palpitations go away. Take another dose 2 minutes later.
Yeah, I will try that. I'll try that.
And in general, your diet is a pretty healthy diet?
Yes, in general, yep. We're trying. My husband had a heart attack here a few years ago, so I kind of really redid our menu. And, you know, it's so much better, you know. Lots of whole grains and, you know, vegetables and fruits. You can always do better, but, you know, much better than we were.
Well, your vegetables and fruits are cooked, yes?
Yes.
Good. Sounds excellent to me. You know, there's always a danger of getting your diet too good, because if you get your diet too good and then you have a health problem, there's nothing in your diet to change. So make sure not to get it too good.
Okay. I'm wondering about, you know, I wanted to add some seaweed, and then I'm thinking, but if I'm switching back and forth with this thyroid thing, I mean, can I have just a little bit and have it, you know, like a little bit so much a week or something? Because it's like I'm thinking I don't use iodized salt, and the endocrinologist said, oh, we, us as as Americans, we get more iodine than we need because we get it in our flour and in our milk. And I thought, well, you know, that doesn't make sense to me, but it's kind of like a...
Every nuclear power plant has a yearly amount of radioactive iodine that they're allowed to release. Some nuclear power plants release radioactive iodine on a daily basis. Some save it up and release the whole year's worth on one day.
Oh, wow.
So there is a significant amount of radioactive iodine in the environment and in the atmosphere, and we do indeed absorb and use that radioactive iodine. Furthermore, a great many cows have their udders washed with an iodine solution. That iodine solution is left wet on the udder, and then the milking machine is put on, and of course trace amounts of that iodine solution then are in the milk. It's not considered a contaminant because it's an antibacterial.
Mm-hmm.
But most people who consume commercial dairy products are getting extra iodine in that way. Seaweed is a wonderful addition to the diet, but not because of the iodine it contains so much, but because of the minerals that it contains and the algin. An algin is a really amazing substance. It binds to heavy metals and radioactive nucleotides in our bodies and draws them out. And this is even true of seaweed harvested in Japan. Study after study has measured radioactivity in seaweed, fed that seaweed to people, and then measured the radioactivity in the seaweed exiting the body, and it's always higher.
Oh. Wow.
So seaweed is definitely one of the best ways to ensure that environmental radioactivity is not lingering in your body. Now, this is a very interesting comparison that I read the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, I think, helps us to understand. The entire amount of radiation that was released from Fukushima is less than the amount of radiation that was released into the environment from the above-ground nuclear tests done in the 50s in the United States.
Oh, my.
And that, in turn, is less than normal background radiation produced by the Earth.
Hmm. Wow.
A fish caught in the Pacific Ocean today compared to a banana, the banana has 50 times more radioactivity. Many people are whipped into frenzies of fear by people who have little knowledge, especially about radioactivity and heavy metals.
Mm-hmm.
And as my friend said, they're called heavy metals for a reason, Susan. What do you think happens to a heavy metal when it's released? And I looked at her and I said, it sinks. She said, bingo, you got it. Heavy metals sink almost immediately to the floor of the ocean and do not move around. So, we don't have time to move any further into your need for story tonight. But let me tell you that story medicine is a medicine. And you're going from person to person asking them for a story. Have you asked your wise healer within for a story?
No. Well, you know, sometimes I do. I want that to be, you know, it's like that's where I get my intuition. It's like if I can sit quiet enough, but I don't do that enough.
And you need to specifically ask. If somebody says to you, hey, Kathy, how's everything going? You say, fine. If somebody says to you, Kathy, how's your daughter? Ah, they're going to get more specific information, aren't they? I don't even know if you have a daughter.
Yeah. Yes, I do. And I thought, how does she know I have a daughter?
So I think we have a plan of action.
Yeah.
Which calls for the removal of all doctors from the premises.
Yes.
And cancellation of any further appointments that we have with doctors. And continuing to drink our nourishing herbal infusions and to eat a good diet. And to take some time for serenity medicine. Set aside some time every day for serenity medicine. And one or more times during the week to actually take the time to sit with your wise healer within and say, what do I need to know? Is there something I need to do? Do I need help from an outside source?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well,
I'm not against help from outside sources. I'm just against your becoming a dartboard in which they're throwing diagnoses.
That's exactly how I feel. I just feel like I'm bouncing around from person to person, and they're just... And it's like, oh, I want it to stop. And I know I have to be the one to say stop.
That's it. You got it. Very smart.
Yeah. Okay. Just one more question. Seaweed, powdered kelp. You have mentioned that in your book. Is that a good one to kind of incorporate into my diet?
Actually, I simply say in my book, don't use powdered kelp.
Oh, okay.
That algae I was talking about, that's the most important component of the seaweed.
Uh-huh.
Unless you know who has powdered your kelp, and there's only two people in the United States, two people in the world that I would trust to powder my kelp for me. Unless you know who's powdered your kelp, the strong likelihood is there's no algae in your powdered kelp.
Okay.
And there, algae is a critically important commercial additive to a great many foods and drugs. And so kelp seaweed is harvested in large boats that drop chains down and rip the seaweed up by its roots. It's a perennial plant. If simply the leaves are harvested, it can continue to grow for hundreds of years. But commercially, kelp is harvested by throwing chains down among the kelp beds and winching it back in, pulling the kelp up, roots and all. The kelp is then dealginated on board the boat, and the remaining dealginated kelp is dried and powdered on the boat so it doesn't rot.
Oh.
Because it can't be sold as a whole seaweed because the algae has been removed.
So it's best to buy it whole.
Or to get Lars Hansen to grind it for you, or to get Ryan Drum to grind it for you if you want it ground. They both harvest the seaweed, and they do have grinders, and will grind seaweed for you if you choose to have it ground.
Oh, okay.
I prefer to eat my seaweed as a vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding, and it could be a faulty understanding, but my understanding is that a plant that is whole contains antioxidants. And once I start cutting the plant up, those antioxidants interact with the oxygen in the air and they're no longer viable or usable. And the more finely I cut the plant up, the more I lose the value, the nutritional value of the food, and that by the time I've gotten to a powdered food, there is little to no nutritional value available.
Hmm.
Okay. Have you ever bought any powdered cinnamon?
Yes.
How long did it stay tasty?
Not very long. Not very long.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, your husband is wasting everybody's money by buying fruits and vegetables powdered in pills.
Hmm.
I don't agree with him. I think it can hurt you.
now it's, I need to get back just to the basics. Yeah.
Also, think about the size of a beet.
Mm-hmm.
Is it theoretically possible to eat a beet as part of your dinner?
Yes.
No problem, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's dry the beet. How much smaller does that dried beet get?
Very small, very small.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't it? No?
Have you ever dried a beet?
No. I'm thinking I've dried a tomato, so it's just shrunk
but
down.
But a tomato is mostly water.
Okay, so a beet, when it's dried, doesn't get too small.
No, it loses maybe half of its size. So one beet is a pile of beet powder. How many vegetables and fruits are in these pills he's taking?
Oh, my. There's a list of maybe 10 or 12. And there's also some algae in there.
So let's estimate how much of any one fruit or vegetable could be in any one capsule. Given that it would take 10 capsules just to put one beet in capsules powdered.
Oh, okay. Now I have the picture in my head. Yeah.
Kind of silly, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, right?
Yeah.
How do they manage to sell people these silly things?
Uh-huh.
Because they're selling desire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I won't take up any more of your time, but I really appreciate it, and I follow you, and I just think of you as my guru, and I'm thrilled that I was able to talk to you today.
Thank you so much, Kathy. Green blessings.
Green blessings, too. Bye.
We have two more callers waiting right now, so in the 819 area code.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Susan. This is Monique calling from Valmarain.
Hi, Monique.
And hi.
Lovely children here. Hi. Bonjour. Monique.
What? I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
I said bonjour, and then I said, oh, bonne nuit.
Bonjour et bonne nuit, for sure, soon. And I really have to say thank you so much to you and to all the callers that come in, because each phone call, I feel like I learn so much. I've enjoyed being on hold here. Thank you so much for this time that you provide for us. The kids, Emil, who's 9, and Maggie, who's 6, Emil has 7 cavities, Maggie has 9, and I just got a phone call reminding me that tomorrow the cavity work is starting. And since this was on the table of the, this work coming up, I just feel like I could do so much if I take the time now and incorporate all that nourishing food that I slacked off on over the busy school year. And I just feel like I could do something about this before, going through the making. I didn't see even on the x-rays the size of these cavities. So as I was reading up on them, I don't like the idea of drilling bigger holes into the teeth and filling them. And there's still, I just feel there's other hope. And I just want to call in to ask you about that, simply through providing a more nourishing diet, would that be enough to, I don't know if they, from what I've read, cavities can be healed. Could I do that instead of rushing and panicking tomorrow into cavity land at the dentist?
As far as I'm concerned, cavities cannot be reversed.
Okay.
Now, I've just received a book called Dental Herbalism, Natural mm-hmm. Therapies for the Mouth, and I'm looking in the index. I first looked under cavities, and it said, look for tooth decay. And they've got about 15, 16 pages on tooth decay. And still mm-hmm. looking in the index, they have baby bottle decay, bacteria, and dental interventions for, and there's 5 pages on that, detection of factors affecting, and there's 3 pages on that, food choices, and there's 3 pages on that, pain mm-hmm. management, prevalence in U.S. children, protecting teeth from, symptoms mm-hmm. of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are any of these entries reversing tooth decay?
No.
I think you're familiar with the book Where There Is No Doctor. There's a companion volume called Where There Is No Dentist. There is no chapter on reversing tooth decay.
Hmm. So
if someone steals your horse and you lock the barn, will it prevent the horse from being stolen?
I'm sorry, could you, I missed the part, the first part.
If someone steals your horse.
Okay, yeah.
And you then go and lock the barn. Are you preventing anyone from stealing your horse?
No, it's already been stolen.
Correcto.
Mm-hmm.
The bacteria that cause tooth decay penetrate the enamel of the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
There are dietary and protective things you can do to keep the enamel strong. There are dietary and protective things that you can do to keep those bacteria out of your mouth.
Mm.
If those things have not been done and those bacteria are present and they eat through the enamel of the tooth, which is there to protect the tooth, then they begin to eat the soft interior of the tooth.
Okay.
Which is called the dentin. And the dentin mm-hmm. is supplied with nerves. And if the bacterial infection is left, then it will go into the nerves. And from the nerves, it will go into the bone. And it is possible to lose your jawbone from tooth decay. Usually, what happens is the tooth decays, falls out before the bone is completely eroded, but you are left with a jawbone that has less gripping power. Now there's mm-hmm. a space where the decayed tooth has fallen out and the other teeth shift around in the mouth
mm-hmm.
to try to fill in that space, and now you lose your bite
yeah.
because the teeth come together in a certain way, which is called the bite. And once you have lost your bite, you don't chew up your food very well, and now the grinding mm-hmm. surfaces of the teeth don't match well, and you begin to grind your teeth away, opening them up to more decay. I have a friend who never wanted to get her teeth filled,
mm-hmm.
and she didn't. I have known her for a very, very long time, and at no time during that time would she ever go to a dentist. Her teeth sometimes hurt her extremely.
Mm-hmm.
Her teeth turn black. Most of her teeth rot and fall out of her face. And ultimately, she wound up having what remained of her teeth pulled, and she now has dentures.
Hmm.
Is this what you're envisioning for your children, Monique?
Not at all. But I am if I don't go to the dentist tomorrow.
That's right.
Yeah.
I am so happy that my parents had my cavities filled when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
I still have cavities that have been filled in my mouth. I still have fillings that were put in when I was 9 years old.
Yeah.
They're still there and effective mm-hmm. in protecting that tooth.
Yeah.
Modern dentistry is an absolute miracle. 100 years ago, there's hardly a person alive who had a tooth left in their mouth past the age of 60. And most people by the age of 40 had less than half their teeth.
Mm. I am so thankful that I made this call.
Yeah. So, there is a very high prevalence of tooth decay among children who are breastfed for extended times.
Oh. Okay.
I see it all around me.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to talk to women about because the pendulum has swung the other way. Mm-hmm. When I was a nursing mom, I was considered aberrant and disgusting.
Hmm.
And nowadays, it's the other way around. If you don't nurse, you're considered aberrant. And what has happened is that many women miss the weaning window, which for most children is between 12 and 14 months.
Okay.
And if you miss that, yes, and if you miss that weaning window, you're going to wind up with a child who wants to nurse mm-hmm. for between 4 and 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to want to nurse primarily at bedtime, and it is going to destroy their teeth.
Ah, I like hearing that information. Thank you so much. Well, both Emil went till 14 months and Maggie till 2 years. And so a little over the top.
Yeah.
Okay. Super. Well, nothing wrong with upgrading their nourishing diet anyhow.
Absolutely
future,
nothing wrong with upgrading. Let's see what they say about food choices here. And this stuff's pretty early on in the book, before page 100 here. So let's see. What they're suggesting, sugar is what the microorganisms in the mouth love the most. Make sure that you get lots of sugar if you want lots of cavities. Okay.
That's
bacteria
it, eh?
Plus sugar equals acid equals tooth decay.
Mm-hmm.
The role of saliva and pH. Get the saliva. Enamel is the hardest substance the body produces, far harder than the other components of the teeth. Once acid eats through the enamel, decay occurs rapidly. Tooth enamel that has developed with an appropriate amount of fluoride present during mm-hmm. the developmental stage of a child's life will resist bacteria far better than children who do not receive the benefit of fluoride when they are young.
Hmm. Jeez. Heard so much the opposite. That's great. Okay.
You've heard the opposite, that fluoride causes tooth decay?
Well, I heard the opposite, that yes, that we shouldn't put fluoride in our children's mouths. And I wasn't using natural toothpaste, but I was having the kids brush, you know, just with their toothbrushes to brush out the food.
And heard the opposite. No one says that fluoride does not prevent tooth decay. It is, you know, as true as the fact that rain falls down, that fluoride prevents tooth decay, and that the earlier in our life we have systemic fluoride, the stronger our teeth will be for the rest of our life.
Okay.
Yes, there are people who say you shouldn't use fluoride, but they don't say it doesn't prevent cavities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, in terms of the diet, there's not really anything that you can add to the diet that's going to prevent tooth decay?
Nothing I could add to that's going to prevent, no. What I was reading that...
what's
nice
really clear here and what's really clear all along is sugar equals acid equals tooth decay.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's fruit sugar as well as white sugar.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And would honeys and maple syrup work in that as well as the sugar? But no, white sugars and fruit. Okay.
Any sugar, honey and maple syrup certainly counts. We're not saying that you have to have a sugar-free diet, that you can't have any sweeteners at all. But
yeah.
Think about what remains on the teeth. Like dentists are violently anti-raisins.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Those raisins are very sticky and acidic, and they stick to the teeth, and they just drill that acid into the teeth while they're stuck there.
Okay. Yeah. Great.
So again, cooked has far less acids than raw fruit.
Okay. Yes.
Yep.
Wonderful.
So off you go to the dentist to get the cavity filled, perhaps a little motherwort tincture to calm you and the kids down before you go.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Right?
Okay.
And, you know, I personally think that it's really important as a parent that we teach our children to love the dentist and honor the dentist and want to go to the dentist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I hear you.
And that this is an exciting adventure, not a, oh, God, we failed thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm so glad I didn't have the big, heavy talk with them. Yeah. And I got to talk to you first.
I'm so glad you called.
Me too. Thank you so much, and a beautiful evening to you all.
I love you lots, Monique, and love your children, too.
Thank you. Love you, too, Susan. Good night.
All right. We have two more callers in the 906 area code.
Susan, this is Phil.
Hi, Phil.
How are you doing? I appreciate
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Good, good. Appreciate your detailed information and your patient teaching style. Here's my question.
What would you like to ask tonight?
The question is, I have a sister who's about 60 years old, and she was diagnosed earlier this year with bladder cancer. And it
Phil.
Was treated early, very Phil. Early. Yes.
Phil, I do not do secondhand consultations.
Okay.
What
my
would
question,
you like to ask at your health? Or what herb would you like to talk about? But I don't talk about people who aren't here. Now, I make exception to that rule if she can't speak, if she's below the age of 4 or over the age of 90. But if she's interested, please have her call me.
All right.
If she's not interested, what are we doing talking about her?
I was wanting to help her with some nutrition.
Did she ask
and,
you for this help?
Yes. I have
please have,
I have
her call
some
me.
Land.
Mm-hmm. I would be happy to speak with her. And if you've been listening to the show, you know that the first thing that I suggest for anyone with any kind of desire to be healthier, no matter what your health is now, is to drink nourishing herbal infusions. Are you drinking nourishing herbal infusions?
I've started doing that, yeah.
Wonderful. That would be an easy thing that you could do for her and that you could turn her on to.
Well, I was going to ask you this specific question and just consider that I'm asking it, okay, about myself. I've got a little bit of property with some red clover. And, in fact, my dining room table is covered with red clover right now, drying out. So how much
I hope
do
it's
you...
on a screen and not on the table.
How much
red clover
do you
cannot
collect?
Touch any surface while it's drying or it will rot.
Well, mine is drying out. I turn it and, you know, flip it over and it's drying. It's still got the red color on the clover.
Sounds good.
It's by a window. Maybe that's helping.
Worst
but here's
possible
the question.
Place. worst possible place to dry an herb is by a window.
I'm doing everything wrong.
From the moment an herb is harvested, for the rest of its life, the sun is its enemy.
Well, it's not getting hit by the sun. It's just getting air.
Okay.
And it's not rotting. Okay.
I'm so glad to hear it.
I'll put it on a screen.
Much better.
How much, though? Like, how much do you go through a year? A pillow bag?
Tell me what kind of scale you use when you make an infusion.
Digital, 1 ounce and a quart of boiling water, covered
for at least
4 hours.
We have 1 ounce of herb per day. That would be 2 pounds of herb per month, yes?
Okay.
1 ounce of herb makes 1 quart of infusion. We drink a quart a day. There's approximately 30 days in a month, and there's 32 ounces in 2 pounds. There are 12 months in a year. So that's 24 pounds of herb per year that I use. Here's what I suggest if people want to buy it all at once, and there's no reason not to buy it all at once. 5 pounds of stinging nettle, 5 pounds of oat straw, 5 pounds of comfrey leaf, 5 pounds of red clover, 3 pounds of linden, because we use only half an ounce of linden. And that's the amount of herb that one person would use in 1 year to make a quart of nourishing herbal infusion every day.
Okay. Thank you for that. I'm just going to have to weigh it out after I dry it.
Also be aware that red clover often contains insect eggs. It's a really good idea if you dry it to put it in the freezer for a couple of weeks before you store it.
Okay.
Well, freeze out those insect eggs and you will not have a surprise hatch on January 1st.
Okay.
Nothing like opening your red clover bag in the middle of the winter only to have hundreds of insects crawl and fly out of it.
Good idea. I noticed when I was picking it, a lot of them had the like snot on the stem.
If you move that aside,
it was like white insect eggs. Yeah.
That's not eggs. If you actually touch it, you'll see that there's an insect inside it, and that's insect sunscreen. Looks like spit. It looks like foamy spit, like somebody spit on the plant.
Right.
That's not eggs. It's a sunscreen for a soft-bodied insect, which you can find in there. Screen. It's actually edible.
Okay. I thought those were eggs.
They're not.
All right. Well, we have 3 more callers waiting on the line now, so I want to get through a few more here.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can get through those. Thank you so much for calling. And perhaps your aunt will give a call. And sounds like you're doing just great drying your red clover and green blessings.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good.
All right, in the 650 area code.
Hi, Susan. My name is Anna. I first heard you speak at a conference with Zandra O'Neill, and I found the things that you were saying about the fertility benefits of red clover infusions to be really interesting. So I've started drinking them, and my questions were mostly about any potential harmful effect on on progesterone levels. I've since been tested and had my progesterone levels show to be quite low. And I know that there are lots of phytoestrogens or phytoestrogenic effects of the red clover. So I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't doing something actually bad for myself or my fertility by drinking the red clover infusions.
The short answer to your question is you're doing just fine. The long answer to your question would take an hour.
Okay.
Okay.
Right, do you mind
most of what you said is only half true.
Okay.
Hormone levels in a woman's body change hour to hour. How many progesterone tests were taken?
I've taken three.
And they did an average of those three?
No, so this was three tests in three different cycles on day 21. And
so all on the same day?
Yeah,
all
on the same day of three different cycles. So,
so as far as I'm concerned, that can't give an accurate view.
Right, okay. Okay.
I will say in general that I have rarely seen any information from any kind of hormone test that is very useful.
Okay.
So you're fine with the red clover and you're heading toward a pregnancy? It's your goal?
Hopefully. Yeah, that is the goal.
Okay, good. Green blessings to you and that pregnancy.
Okay. Thanks.
All righty.
All right. In the 781 area code.
Hello, this is Rebecca calling.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Susan. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about bug bites.
Okay.
I'm having a little different experience with bug bites in that usually if I get a mosquito bite or a spider bite, they're smaller, rounder, smoother kind of eruptions on my skin. And lately, like the last couple of months, like if I'm working outside and I get a bite, it's much more lumpy and larger, the area that's irritated and itching off and on. So I'm just, so it's just been troubling to me the difference in the way that my skin looks and feels with these bites. And I didn't know if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, what you're describing is a stronger inflammatory reaction.
Yes.
And inflammatory reactions arise from changes in how we're feeling and what we're eating.
Okay.
So I find that for a great many people, spices in the diet cause inflammation. And many people will find a lowering of inflammatory response very quickly with the removal of all forms of pepper from the diet.
Wow. Okay. That makes sense. I'll give it a try.
All right.
See what happens.
Let us know what happens.
Thank you, Susan.
And then,
of course,
linden is a wonderful anti-inflammatory, and linden infusion is delightful. Remember, it's half an ounce of linden per quart of water.
Not a problem. I love linden. I just picked a bushel of it today.
All right. Don't use it when it's fresh. Make sure it's dry.
No, it's drying. It's drying now, so I'll be able to have some in a couple of days.
It's so easy to dry because it's so low in protein.
You know, I really thank you for all your work. I follow you, and I can't thank you enough. You're a great mentor. Very
thank
important
you so
to
much.
Me. Okay. Good night.
Good night.
All right, the last caller here in the 360 area code.
Hello, Susan.
Hello.
Hi. I'm returning a call after several weeks. I called you about having the dry eyes and the film over my eyes in the morning. And
yes.
We went through some story medicine, and you told me about palming my eyes and everything, and I wanted to report to you that that has really been successful almost the very first day with the film over my eyes. It was like almost instantaneously gone. The next morning I woke up and it was like, wow, I can see.
Yay, I can see, it's a miracle.
Yes, it was. I loved it. But I have a question about the linden herb. Is, you said that you only use a half an ounce of it with the boiling water, but is there anything else? I thought I remembered you saying something about using cold water with it also.
Yes. So first of all, we make a regular infusion with linden, with half an ounce of linden and a quart of boiling water, and we steep that for 4 hours or overnight. And then we strain it. And we put that liquid in the refrigerator. And then we add 2 cups of cold water to the linden, the wet linden, in a pan, bring that up to a boil, turn off the fire, put a lid on it, and let it sit for 4 to 6 hours.
Okay.
And that's called the rebrew. Linden and comfrey contain mucilaginous components. And those mucilaginous components, which are tremendous anti-inflammatories, are more soluble in cold water than in hot water. So the first hot water infusion extracts the minerals and polyphenols and a host of other important constituents from the plant, but it doesn't get the mucilage. And when you make that rebrew and you strain it, if you squeeze the linden flowers, you will feel the slime on your hands. You will feel that mucilage. It's kind of a funny word because I remember as a kid, but mucilage was glue, right?
All right.
But these are the opposite of glue. These are slippery substances.
Uh-huh. All right.
Well, okay.
I hadn't used the linden before, and I've been feeling discomfort in my joints, so I thought, that ought to be a good one to try.
That should be a wonderful one. Let us know how it works out for you.
I will. Thank you, Susan.
Wonderful.
Green blessings.
Green blessings to you, too. All right. Tonight, we are talking to Karen Kane. She's the author of A Unique Life Fully Lived, A Personal Journey of Love, Hope, and Courage. She is also a parent advocate for children of disability and travels around the country inspiring families with her personal story of raising a medically fragile daughter as a single mom. Karen shares how she bridged the gap from special needs to mainstream experiences in all areas of life for her daughter. Best friends, slumber parties, concerts, camping, beauty pageants, Girl Scouts, school dances, musicals, and travels. Her book describes the unique and extraordinary life experiences that Karen created for her daughter and the strong bond that remains between mother and daughter that continues to this day. And is Karen Kane on the line? Hello, Rebecca. Are you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I'm not seeing Karen Kane on the line. So maybe there was a cancellation that I did not get. But I'm so confused, but
it's okay. You know, it's all okay. Don't worry about a thing. So I had as her phone number, starting with area code 541, so let's just keep a lookout for her. All right.
Sounds good.
And are there any other callers that we have?
No callers in queue with a question.
Okay.
But we could move on.
I know that there are email questions.
Oh, here we go. Here's a caller here. In the 613 area code.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Susan. Thank you for
taking
my call. Yeah, I have a question for you. Because I have like a recurring problem with earwax buildup. And every time I go to the doctor would pump those earwax out. And then I was told so the earwax won't get that hard, I'll have to put like mineral oil. So I'm not sure if that is safe to use. Right now my ear is like black. I couldn't hear on my left side. So I just wanted to ask if you can give me some advice on how to best deal with this problem.
The classic remedy that herbalists offer for the ears is called mullein oil.
Mullein oil?
Mullein oil. And the mullein is blooming across most of North America right now.
Mm-hmm.
One of the difficulties about making mullein oil is that mullein flowers don't come out all at once. They come out here and there, one at a time. And so what people usually do is take a jar and fill it half full of their favorite oil. That could be almond oil or pure olive oil or any other oil that you really like.
Mm-hmm.
And so you fill a jar half full of oil, and then day by day you pick the mullein flowers and drop them in there. When you're done, the jar should be completely full of flowers and oil, right up to the top.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One Frenchman told me that his mom made the kids go out after school every day and pick mullein flowers.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, that's a good idea. That's a lot easier than just one person doing it. You get a whole host of kids to go out and pick flowers, and in, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, they get far more than you could have gotten in an hour of picking. I said, so did she make mullein oil? He said, oh, no, she made mullein wine. I'm like, mullein wine? Oh, my goodness, you know, there's a sedative factor in mullein. He says, yeah, that's right. And on rainy days in the winter, she fed us mullein wine, too. I said, now that's a really smart mom. She knows to get the kids out of the house in the summer to pick mullein flowers and then to calm them down with her mullein flower wine in the winter.
Okay. Well,
okay. Instead, you could make this oil, but let me tell you also that this oil is for sale. This is such a famous remedy. So many people know about this, and so many people love it, that you can just go to a store or go online, and you will find mullein flower oil already made and already for sale, waiting for you.
Okay, so I just have to drop it, like, is there a, like on a daily basis, or?
Yes, just drop a little bit into your ears. Many people like to heat it up before they put it in their ears, and that's certainly fine. It feels nice when it's nice and warm.
Mm-hmm.
And people who feel that there's an infection in their ears, and I don't think you're saying anything about that, sometimes put a clove of garlic. They like pour some mullein oil in a spoon, put a clove of garlic in with it, and then hold it over a candle flame.
Okay. Okay.
To warm it up. But however you want to use it, it will work.
Yeah, and can I like do it like overnight before I sleep? So I leave it like the oil on inside my ear, or?
Flowers and the oil have to steep together for 6 weeks before it becomes effective.
Oh, okay. So, like, daily basis.
Might wish to both buy it and make it.
Okay.
Buy it so that you can start using it immediately. Make it so that you have some on hand if you need it for another time.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I appreciate it so
you
much.
Are welcome. Green blessings.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right, we have another caller here in the 587 area code.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I've never called into a blog talk radio before, so this is fun. I was going to just listen in to, I guess, Karen Kane, but I heard you guys were slow, so I was like, oh, I'll call in and I'll ask about some tinctures because I just came
across
your website.
That's wonderful, but we're not guys.
What's that?
That's wonderful, but we're not guys.
You're not guys? Oh.
No.
Oh, I get what you're saying. Women.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Yeah, do you have time to just talk to a newbie about some how to make tinctures, just the basics.
Harvest plant, fill jar, pour 100-proof vodka over, put on label, put on lid, wait 6 weeks.
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Harvest plant.
Harvest plant.
Fill jar.
Fill jar.
Pour 100-proof vodka to top.
Mm-hmm. Proof vodka. Okay.
Label.
Label.
Lid.
Lid.
Wait 6 weeks.
Wait 6 weeks. All right. That sounds
This is
crazy.
In every single one of my books.
Yeah, I haven't read any of them yet, but I've been browsing on your website. So, yeah, there's some great stuff on here.
I also
so
have done over 100 different YouTubes, and I know that at least 30 of them show me making tinctures.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You are welcome. Green blessings.
Bye.
All right. Would you like to move on to some email questions if we don't have any
Let's
more callers?
Let's do that.
All right. I have somewhat of a, it's a two-part question with a lot of information here, but it's been staying at the top of the list for a couple of weeks now, so here we go. Dear Susan Weed, I am writing to you all the way from Denmark. I know it's a bit of a long mail, but I have a lot on my mind. Thank you for sharing all your knowledge. I am so thankful. I have recently been attending a shamanic practice course, and thanks to your incredible information and podcasts and your green book, which I've been reading page by page, I found myself situated in a tent on a small hillside among so many herbs, all of which I can now recognize as St. Jones, burdock, chickweed, and so many more. It is truly amazing. I now find myself having such an awareness for the plants around me and feel like I have opened a box of treasures. Thanks to all I have learned from you in the few months that I have been following you. I listen to the archived recordings every day while driving for work. I am most grateful you have given my shamanic practice a more deep felt dimension. I feel so connected to my path. Thank you so much. Before my two questions, I'll fill you in on my lifestyle, which I would like to be more healthy. I am 34, mother of two girls, 5 and 8. I work actively outdoor most of the days. I am in archaeology, eat a broad Scandinavian diet, red meat every day, a little milk in my coffee, butter, try to get animal fat for every meal. I also eat fresh fruit and vegetables every day, and I know that you will pinpoint that, and it's difficult to change feelings about what we have always been told about fruits and raw veggies here in Denmark. So much to relearn. I wish to eat more cooked veggies and beans, but it is really difficult for me to bring cooked veggies in a lunchbox, and furthermore, I find it difficult to get used to cooking the veggies for at least an hour, as I now know that you recommend, but I try. You have introduced me to all of my edible weeds in my garden, and there are a lot. I eat mostly typical Danish whole grain dark rye bread every day, brown rice, whole grain pasta, and so on. But I must admit, in a busy workday, harvesting greens and cooking for a long time is a challenge. Now to my questions, of which the first is probably the most easiest. I really want to start drinking herbal infusions. I have a scale, and I thought I would introduce one herb at a time, getting to know it well, starting with nettle because I tend to be a little bit anemic. The real problem is that the taste of nettle infusion makes me almost vomit. I have tried cooling it, mixing it with apple cider, ginger, or honey, or lemon, but still there is something really challenging in the taste for me. What do I do? I am suffering with hormonal acne and two-time migraines, often when stressed out after celebrating a little too much with alcohol. And that doesn't happen more than a couple of times a year. And then she has a second question. Do you want to address that one first?
I didn't hear any question.
I think it was just what she can
nettle
do
makes
drink.
You... lucky. But I didn't hear a question I missed. I'm taking notes.
She says what to do for the taste of nettle.
Take on a lunch. Not true. Not true at all. Give me a break. You're telling me a cooked beet is difficult to take for lunch? You're telling me a cooked carrot is hard to take for lunch? I take these things out on goat watch with me. They're very easy to take for lunch. You need appropriate containers for them, yes. But I have, you know, small plastic. Actually, my favorites are little click-clack boxes that I bought in New Zealand, which hold about a quarter of a cup of food. But there's all kinds of storage containers, at least in the United States, available to you, Rebecca. All kinds of small containers that you could pack in a lunchbox?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I would think so in Denmark, too.
You would think so. So it seems a weird excuse to me that I can't pack cooked vegetables in my lunch. Of course you can. What cooked vegetable can't you pack in your lunch? Cooked green beans would be great. Cooked peas would be great. Cooked carrots, cooked beans, cooked cauliflower, cooked squash, cooked broccoli. Even greens. I can't figure out what vegetable wouldn't be great in a lunch. And if I was going to take a cooked vegetable in my lunch, I would probably also marinate it. I would put vinegar and oil on it the night before, put it in my container, stick it in the refrigerator so that it was chilled in the refrigerator and dressed, because when we put both vinegar and oil on our vegetables, we get more nutrition from them. What can I say about the taste of nettle? Nettle tastes green. And if there isn't a lot of green in your diet, then nettle is going to taste strange. So what I often say to people is, if your ability to taste green has not yet developed, start with one of the infusions that doesn't taste so green, like red clover or linden. And as you are drinking that, that will improve your nutrition to the point that the nettle will begin to taste good to you.
Great. Are you ready for the second question?
Yes.
Okay. I would so appreciate your thought on this. I have experienced sexual abuse when I was a little girl, and in my late teens had a lot of unhealthy sexual relationships, violating, crossing my own personal boundaries because I lacked personal limits, which resulted in low self-esteem, went through a great therapy help group when I was in my 20s, but now in the start of my 30s, I have lost my libido, which is very sad and frustrating for both me and my husband. He is very supportive, and we have tried several things, vibrators, porn, time. I have tried online sexual help courses, and I am, for the moment, attending a sexual therapist, not really working. Have worked with a little bit in my shamanic practice, but feeling a little hopeless. I have self-love, but most of the time, when my husband wants intimate time, I feel like I am performing an act of duty love. Is there any hope for me getting my passion for sex back in my life? Do you have any recommendations for me? Do you think any plant allies could help me? I have recently also purchased the new menopausal book and down there. Thank you a million times. Even though you maybe don't have time for my questions, I have learned so much from you. Love and wishes.
Oat straw, of course, is the herb of desire. So that would also be a great one to start with, since you seem to want an herbal infusion to start with. And nettle, your first choice, is not working for you. So oat straw is wonderful tasting to the vast majority of people. As a matter of fact, we frequently choose to serve oat straw here at a class, if it's not going to be a class on herbs, if there's a visiting teacher and the people are not coming necessarily to learn about herbs, that oat straw would be one of the infusions that we would choose because it tastes so bland and so nice to people. And oat straw does indeed bring back libido. But there is another question here, and it's a question that actually I find comes up a lot. And that question is, what do you mean by sex? I find that a great many people define sex as intercourse. And yet, when I ask people, did Monica and Bill have sex, the vast majority of people say yes. Now, so far as we know, they could be lying, but so far as we know, he didn't put his thing in her thing. And so there was no intercourse involved, and yet we all agree that they had sex. So when women say to me, I've lost my desire for sex, the first question that I always ask is, what do you mean, sex? Women, speaking frankly, and I have been in a great many situations with a great many women speaking frankly, usually say that intercourse falls near the bottom of their list of things that they are really interested in doing. If you find that you are performing an act of duty, that sounds to me like intercourse. Would it feel like an act of duty if you snuggled? Would it feel like an act of duty if you dressed up and did a striptease while he masturbated? It's hard to tell from a letter, and I could be getting this wrong, but it sounds like from your letter that what you want is to reestablish yourself as sexually accessible for your husband's pleasure. It worked for a little while, but it will never work for long. You must be accessible for your pleasure, whatever sex is, however you are going to define it. It needs to be about your pleasure. One of my students once showed me a book that she was writing. In fact, many of my students who write show me the books that they're writing. And depending on our relationship, I will often do some editing work for it. And I did agree to read her book. And it was a book of erotic stories. Every story in her book of erotic stories ended with the man ejaculating. And I gave the book back to her and I said, not interesting. And especially not interesting to women. There is no woman in any of these stories who is focused on her pleasure. There is no woman in any of these stories who is calling the shots and say, I want this now. I want this now. Do this this way. They are all available to others as an object of pleasure. And as you have discovered, although we may get some enjoyment from that, it's not enough to sustain us. I'm certainly not saying that you can't be an object of someone else's pleasure. Of course you can. Mothers are objects of others' pleasure, aren't they? But what I'm saying to you, a woman who's saying I've lost my libido, is the place to look for it is not in pleasing someone else, but in pleasing yourself. So when you say you've tried a vibrator, I'm not sure what you mean. Have you, yourself, alone, spent time with a vibrator for your pleasure? Or is this vibrator being used by you or your mate in an attempt to bring you to orgasm so that that can be checked off your list of sexual things completed? I don't have to tell you that that's not going to work very well. Let me tell you one of the funniest sexual stories that I can share. My sweetheart and I decided that the best birth control available to us would be for him to give his testicles to the goddess. And so we arranged for him to have a vasectomy. And it was a very lovely time indeed. I brought a large crystal with me. And when we said to the doctor, we would like to have this large crystal here during the operation, the doctor pulled back a curtain at the end of the room and revealed his altar with an even larger crystal. He said, here, you can put it here. So we were quite thrilled that this doctor was so on the same page with us. And it was unproblematic surgery, very easily done, and I got to take my sweetheart home and coddle him and pamper him for a few days. And then the doctor wanted us to come back, and he wanted a sample, an ejaculate sample, because he wanted to be sure that there weren't sperm in that ejaculate sample. It's kind of like double-checking his work, you know? And we didn't think anything of it. As a matter of fact, my sweetheart is a porn star and has starred in hundreds and hundreds of movies. So ejaculate sample, hey, it's not a big deal for him. He's masturbated in front of all kinds of people and cameras and so on. And so we said, you know, that's what we'll do. We'll drive up to, you know, the town where the doctor is, and then we'll stop. And we'd already picked up the place. And, you know, I'll whisper sweet nothings in his ear and other things that he likes, and he'll masturbate, and we'll get an ejaculate sample. Well, we must have spent an hour sitting there with no results of any kind. And finally, we just looked at each other, burst into laughter, and said, I guess you just don't love that doctor enough to come for him. And we turned around and drove home. The doctor was very upset and extremely unhappy with us, but we felt that we had done everything we needed to do, and we were going to trust the results of the doctor's surgery, and they were, in fact, 100%. I hope this is of some help to you in your quest. I feel very strongly for you, and I'm glad that you have a copy of Down There. There's lots of other information in Down There.
All right. We do have another caller that queued up in the 404 area code.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. So I have a question, and I'm hoping you can help me think of a situation from the Wise Woman Way. I've been really, really just taken and intrigued by the Wise Woman healing tradition, and the, you know, looking at problems as your allies is just so amazing. So it's kind of, it's very personal, but I feel a little bit trapped by motherhood, and it's hard to say because I love my children.
You, I mean, are trapped by motherhood.
Yes. Yes,
of course
I'm
you are.
Feeling kind of like
pinned. For the rest of your life.
Yes.
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 But
how
suspect,
is this? I'm trying
I
to.
I suspect I could be wrong, but I
ally.
Suspect you had a hand in this.
Yes. I have two children, and they're amazing. And but I still feel like sort of, you know, pinned in a place, like one of those butterflies in a frame, if that makes any sense. So I'm trying to, like, look at this as my ally and see where to go from here or how to just move beyond feeling like I'm stuck in place and wanting to do all these things. And, yeah.
Have you ever heard the word koan?
No.
It's a Japanese riddle. And when you sit zazen, you are often given a koan to contemplate.
Mm-hmm.
So here is a koan for you.
Okay.
There is a jar with a rather large neck. It's lying on its side, and it contains several handfuls of corn, cracked corn. Here comes a duck. The duck sees the corn in the bottle. The duck manages to squeeze itself into the bottle and eat the corn. Uh-oh. The duck has now gotten too fat to get out of the bottle. You have 5 seconds to tell me how you will get the duck out of the bottle without breaking the bottle or harming the duck. And it must happen now.
Wait.
It must happen now. You must remove the duck from the bottle now.
Break the bottle.
Without breaking the bottle or harming the duck. Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. Who put the duck in the bottle?
The duck.
No, you did. Is there a duck in the room with you? Is there a bottle in the room with you? You imagined the duck. You imagined the bottle, and you put the duck in the bottle. The duck is out of the bottle. The duck in the duck in the bottle, koan, tells us that we are usually the prisoners of our own thoughts. And that if we wish to remove the duck from the bottle, we need only change our thinking. What is it that you cannot do because you're a mother? Believe me, others have done it. I know a couple who took their two children on a bicycle ride around the world. There's only 67 seconds left of this blog talk show, so if we want to talk about more, I'm going to have to ask you to call back on another Tuesday. Listeners, thank you so much for helping me reweave the healing cloak of the ancients. Remember, herbal medicine is people's medicine. It's the medicine of the people, by the people, and for the people. Herbal medicine is the medicine right outside your door. It's not health insurance, it's health assurance. When you know about herbs, you don't need to worry about buying medicine because the earth is giving you medicine for free. Green blessings until we meet again.